on radio, on YouTube, streaming live on investtalk.com, and for our podcast subscribers, this is Invest Talk. Independent thinking, shared success. Invest Talk is made possible by KPP Financial, a registered investment advisor firm serving clients throughout the United States. Here is KPP Financial Chief Executive Officer, Financial Advisor Justin Klein.
Good afternoon, fellow investors, and welcome back to Invest Talk. This is our Wednesday, February 11th, 2026 edition of Invest Talk. A lot going on in today's market, and we will unpack it all for you. But what's most important will be your questions. So I'm host Justin Klein, and my goal here is to help you become a better investor. And I mainly do that by answering those questions, as well as obviously giving you an update of what's going on in the market. Very interesting day. We have some jobs numbers and continued weakness in what I call bits in the sky, and continued strength in the atoms in the ground, and what is needed to really build out the AI infrastructure that continues kind of unabated. And that's what the story of today's market really is about. So we'll dig into this and much, much more during this hour. In just a bit, we'll talk about today's market performance and run down the show topics. But as usual, we'll tackle this caller question first.
Hi, this is Pete from Saugus. My question concerns DLR, Digital Realty Trust. What are your thoughts and recommendations concerning the stock? Thank you. Love the show.
Are looking at Digital Realty Trust, DLR, and this is a REIT that's a data center REIT. And historically, it has been a pretty good performer, especially as REITs go with its profitability, but its cash flow has remained negative for some time, and debt has continued to rise. And that's a bit of a worry in the fact that, you know, that can't continue unabated, shall we say. And their dividend has really been flat since 2022. So they haven't been able to increase that dividend. And to me, that is a bit of a warning with REITs. So REITs have to pay a certain amount of their cash flow in order to maintain their REIT status. That's a pass-through entity. Otherwise, if they don't, they have to pay tax on the as a corporate level. And that's not what a REIT is designed to do. And so there is... investors should hope that that dividend is rising over time and you're not getting an increase in the debt. The problem is that's what you're seeing here, flat dividend and rising debt. And I don't like that. I don't like the multiples it's trading at. On the surface, the earnings, or in REIT terms, is funds from operations. That looks to be going well, but I worry too about you know, these hyperscalers that are doing their own investment and they're doing a lot of what Digital Realty typically does. And the input costs to build out these infrastructure projects are becoming more expensive as well. And so that's going to hurt their margins. So I just think there are a lot better opportunities out there than Digital Realty, and I would pass on it. That is DLR. Thanks for the call. 8899 chart, 8899924278. So you get through and ask your question on today's show. And we're going to go to a live call. Chris from Atlanta looking at SSNC.
Hey, how are you doing tonight?
Doing pretty well. Looking at SSNC Technologies, correct?
Yeah, I am. It's one I've followed. You know, I've heard you talk about it in the past, one of your favorites. And it was on my watch list, and I've just seen it kind of really rolling over this year. Is there any reasons to why, or do you see that it's just fallen back to evaluation?
Well, it's going down for the same reason that a lot of software stocks are going down. It's AI. The worry is that their business will be upended by companies like ours that would build the technology to ourselves and usurp what SSNC does. So I'll give you a little background here. We have a good, I have a good background with this because we actually were clients of SSNC Technologies. It's called Black Diamond. It was our first kind of cloud computing. It was our first big cloud computing transition from one of their old platforms called Axis that was a 90s-based platform and server-based. And so I said, we need to move to something modern. We moved to Black Diamond, and it was a seamless process. Now, over time, based on costs and features, we actually migrated over to another software vendor called Orion. And to us, we're much happier. It's a more robust platform, and we really like it. So, you know, you have certain advisors that go from one platform to the other. They also have deeper software that hedge funds use, other institutional platforms use, et cetera. And that's what SNC does. It's basically software for the financial services industry. And so we like Black Diamond, but now we like Orion better. Now, what I will say is we are building internal systems to usurp some of the technologies that we utilize, we pay for, right? We pay Orion, used to pay SS&C through Black Diamond. But what I will say is, based on security, complexity, integration with the brokers, right? So we use Schwab, soon Fidelity as well. And that's a direct feed that downloads our client data straight into Orion. It used to be Black Diamond. And I don't think that's something we're going to build ourselves. That I don't think that Schwab is going to directly deal with every advisor in that way, at least in the short to medium term. That's definitely not the case. And so to me, their technology tools, at least in our experience, they're too complicated. I don't care what AI can do. There's just a lot of moving parts, and we're not going to really build out something like that. Now, maybe a big organization would. So I think that's the worry, is that some of the larger institutional clients might say, why keep paying SS&C? We're going to have our tech team that may have a dozen people use AI to build out their own platform. I still think that's kind of far-fetched in my mind in the short to medium term. And so I think the sell-off is a bit overblown. Now, the technicals are not great right now. I'll say that as it rolled over. Let me give you a major support level, because I do think this is a type of name that you would want to pick up on a sell-off, as I think this is kind of the baby being thrown out the bathwater. So this could go down, though, as low as about $63. Now we're at $73, roughly. So, you know, is there another 10 to 15% down from here before that ultimate bottom? I could easily see that. But I do think this is a name that has a good balance sheet, good fundamentals, and I'd be buying it, you know, a bit lower from here.
All right, cool. Thank you. I appreciate you.
No problem. Thanks for the call. Hopefully everyone got a little insight into our industry and how we deal with companies like SS&C and others. And, you know, it's going to be an interesting next decade or so, but I don't think software as a service is going away completely. I think in certain pockets, it could be, their moats can be eaten away a little bit, but I don't think overall most of these software names are in dire straits or anything like that. Those still to come, a heads up on today's show and topics, more of your questions, and a market wrap-up as well. So that's all coming up next.
When you tell your friends about InvestTalk and they ask you why you listen, let them know there are many reasons, and one is parallel investing, from KPP Financial and InvestTalk host Justin Klein. Parallel investing means Justin invests right alongside KPP Financial clients. He makes the same trade for KPP Financial on the same day, at the same price, and the same percentages as KPP clients. There's no front running and no special treatment. In this way, Justin and KPP Financial share the same risks and the same potential for success. Parallel investing aligns the interests of Justin and KPP Financial with those of his clients. Justin Klein and Luke Guerrero are ready to answer your questions about parallel investing. And you can learn more anytime at investtalk.com. Now, with 62 million downloads, InvestTalk, 888-99-CHART.
888-99 chart, 888-992-4278. So I get through and ask your question on today's show. And let's take a quick look at the markets overall. And it was kind of a mixed day, but mostly red, but very minor. NASDAQ was down 36 points, about 0.16%. S&P was literally down less than 1 point, so it's flat on the day. Dow down 66 points, down about 0.13% on the day. And it was, if you look at the heat map, it was a very interesting day. Technology services were in the red. Names like, when I say services, that's kind of the cloud computing, the SaaS type of softwares. Names like Google, Microsoft, Oracle, IBM, Netflix, Palantir, Accenture, Salesforce, AppLovin, Intuit, Robinhood, Autodesk. These are all names, ServiceNow. These are all software names, all in the red today, in a, you know, at least two roughly or more percent. Now, there's a lot of green though, especially in electronic technology. So think hardware. NVIDIA was up near the 1%. Apple up 0.75%. Broadcom up. You had Micron up nearly 10% on the day. Intel, 2.5%. Texas Instruments, 2.5%. So a lot of green on that side. Retail was a bit mixed. Amazon down. I think it kind of in concert more with the technology services. Remember, it's kind of half AWS, half its retail business. And so I think the AWS side is kind of been a drag recently. And I think that's what will continue to weigh on Amazon stock, as well as the long-term agentics AI software that could potentially at some point in the next 5 to 10 years usurp what Amazon does in the retail side. So I think there's a lot of risk there. But names like Walmart and Costco were higher. Anything in industrial space was strong. You had Caterpillar up 4%, AMAT and Lam Research up over 3%. You had consumer staples, Procter & Gamble, Coke, Philip Morris, Pepsi, all in the green. Same with the energy. Energy was strong. You had Exxon and Chevron up to about 2% or more. So oil continues to be strong. And I think it's a pretty good place to be at the current time. So once again, kind of a mixed bag and a continued market rotation that we see right now. And I think that's a story for probably most of 2026. I think that is a trend that really started in the fourth quarter and is just accelerating as we hit into the new year. So if you're just in the broad indices, you are going to struggle because most of those big Mag 7 names, they are not in hardware. They are in software. And so those, once again, are likely to struggle. Underneath the surface, what's interesting is, again, think of the top five sectors. If you go look at the S&P, about 80% of the market are in five sectors. Now, there are 11 sectors, but only five are the weightings in the top weightings in the S&P. So the number one is obviously tech, and that peaked in October. Then you have communication services, and that's roughly been flat since September. And then you have financials, and that is rolling over. And then you have consumer cyclicals also rolling over, mainly because of Amazon. And then the fifth one, those are the top four. They're all either neutral to weak on the chart. And then you have healthcare. Healthcare is the fifth largest, just sub 10% of the S&P. And that is actually fairly strong, consolidating from its recent move. That is the saving grace, I think, right now in the market. And then the rest of the market, it's kind of middling. You have everything else that is sub 10% in weighting is actually doing fairly well. Industrials, materials, energy, even utilities are resurging. That's only 2%. Materials is only about 1.8% of the S&P. So this is why the S&P is struggling, because the top four sectors are struggling. It's the bottom seven that are doing well and keeping it roughly flat. So it's very important how you're allocated in this market. And that is a trend that you have to pay attention to. Now, in the headline jobs number that came out, up 130,000, that can be consensus of 70,000, but there was a huge downward revision for last year of 862,000 fewer jobs in the 12 months through March than previously estimated. And that was the largest downward revision since 2009. The job market is not doing well, and that is kind of confirming it. So that was the market today, kind of a mixed bag and a continued market rotation overall. Now we're going into a break. Please remember, you can call anytime, leave your question on the InvestTalk Voice Bank. And if you're listening via our live stream or on AM 1220 in the Bay Area, you can call right now at 888-99-CHART.
In the early days, InvestTalk was Jerry Klein and Steve Peasley. Now the torch has been passed and a new generation of hosts is on the job. Justin Klein and Luke Guerrero. So when you've got finance and investment questions, don't forget to call InvestTalk. 888-99-CHART.
Now, we have a lot of ground to cover over the next 40 minutes or so, and time permitting, we'll get to all of it. And our main focus point is the Valentine's financial audit. Yep, Saturday is Valentine's Day, and love is in the air, but what about your assets, your bank accounts? And we discussed the concept of financial infidelity and how to handle finances together appropriately. Also, we are going to talk about shale. Shale, there's been a shale boom over the past about 15 years in the United States, but a lot of the good wells have been drilled. And so frackers are looking elsewhere because domestic production has plateaued. We'll talk about that. Also, is it a good sign when executives buy their own stock? We'll dig into the numbers there. And if we have time, we'll talk about the current state of inflation. We also have voice bank calls ready to play, one on all spring precious metals, as well as a follow-up question about backdoor Roth IRAs and some questions that came in earlier via the comment section of the InvestTalk YouTube channel as well. And of course, I welcome your live calls. Those will always be number one. 888-99-CHART is the number to call to get in your question right now. Let's pivot back to the InvestTalk voice bank for a question that came in today.
Hi, this is Doug from Georgia, a longtime listener, and I've told as many people as will listen to me about your podcast, and I really appreciate everything you do for everybody. I currently have about 20% of my portfolio into gold and precious metal stocks and about 5% in copper, which I started purchasing about 2.5 years ago. I'm a federal government employee, and I have the Thrift Savings Plan, the TSP, which have basic funds, the CS and I fund. And I have ventured into mutual funds that are located within the TSP several times. I've recently bought the EKWYX. It's the All Spring Precious Metal. Can you give me a thumbs up or thumbs down on the fund and look into your crystal ball and see where you see gold topping? I know that your Q1 market forecast had gold between $4,800 and $5,000 at the year. And I know it's already kind of surpassed that. So if that was the case, I was just kind of looking into that, or should I just maybe look at to an emerging markets fund instead of the gold fund or the precious metal fund? I hope that makes sense, and I appreciate everything you do for us. Thank you.
Well, appreciate the kind words and appreciate you spreading the word about InvestTalk and looking at the All Springs Precious Metal Fund. And it sounded like this is part of your TSP, which I have not heard, or maybe it's some sort of retirement plan. And the fact that you have exposure potentially is a nice thing. I think more 401k should have the ability to get exposed to precious metals in some way, shape, or form. Now, where it ultimately tops, I don't know. I mean, you could go to 20,000. I think that's very possible in a decade's time. Maybe even less, who knows? But clearly the trends are in the favor of precious metals, both politically, geopolitically, the direction of the dollar, and the demand as a neutral reserve asset around the world. And that's a big driver of the recent run and why it continues to be strong. And so getting exposure to that would be good. Now, this is the All Springs Precious Metal Fund, and it has a fee of about 0.79%. And that's a little high if you compare it to a GDX, which is the most popular gold miner ETF, the VanEck gold miner ETF. And that's about 51 basis points is the expense ratio. So it's about 50% more expensive than that. But it's still very good. It's still a very good fund despite a little higher fees. I'd like the fees to be a little bit lower. Maybe over time, as more money goes into these type of funds, it will. But if you look at performance compared to its sector, it does pretty well. Last year was up 164% versus GDX was up 154%. So it beat that out so far. GDX is up 20%, and this is up right about little 19 and change, so slight underperformance this year. In 2024, though, GDX was only up 10.5%, and this is up 21.6%. So I like the way that it's positioned. Morningstar gives it 5 stars. And if this is your only way to get exposure through that TSP or retirement account, then I think this is a fine fund. Now, is it the best fund out there? Probably not, but it's a fine fund to own. Thanks for the call. 8899 chart, 8899-2427-8. So I get through and ask your question on today's show. And on the next Invest Talk, we'll dig into this story. The Lunar New Year liquidity pump next week kicks off the year of the horse. We will discuss the massive pre-holiday cash injection coming from China's central bank and whether it's a trap for foreign investors. That story is tomorrow. But for now, I'm Justin Klein, and I'm ready to take your calls now on 888-99-CHART.
Got a question for Justin or Luke?
I've heard you say multiple times that you prefer shorter duration treasury bonds.
You're the best person to ask it.
Can you explain to me why it is more advisable?
The symbol is UNIT. Wondering what you thought about this REIT, if it would be a good time to get in.
InvestTalk is ready 24/7.
So I was thinking, is it a good idea to sell your losses in a Roth IRA and just use whatever you have left to reinvest into better stocks?
Just wanted to ask you about one stock that I'm looking at, Entergy ETR. If you could run that down for me.
Don't forget to call InvestTalk, 888-99-CHART.
There are a few things that make KPP Financial special. One of them is parallel investing. This means they invest right alongside their clients. Here's how it works. When KPP Financial makes a trade for their clients, Justin Klein makes the same trade for himself and KPP. On the same day, at the same price, and same percentage. No front running, no special treatment. Learn more about parallel investing at investtalk.com.
Now, my main focus point today concerns this story, the Valentine's financial audit. And it's very often I hear this where a client might say, oh, my wife doesn't know about this account, or my husband doesn't know about this, or we manage our finances separately. So I'm doing one thing and he or she might be doing another. And some might call that financial infidelity, but nonetheless, it's withholding information from the other, and it's obviously a red flag, but it's also sometimes not intentional. Maybe the other spouse has no interest in it, and maybe the one spouse didn't consider kind of the broader financial needs of the other or the family as a whole. So just because they're not fully in the loop doesn't mean it's malicious, but it can also still cause problems. So we always recommend couples inform each other, make decisions together, and at least have a mutually beneficial long-term plan for their finances. Now, one can drive the bus, but the other has to be a passenger and watch where you're going so that, you know, if anything happens, they can take the wheel and keep on moving. So what do you need to do to make that happen? Number one is know where the money is coming from and where it is going. At least sit down annually, go over budgets, types of accounts, beneficiaries, contact information for advisors, accountants, anybody that helps with the investing and finance role. Where are the assets? How are they invested? What's the debt? Where's the income coming from? How consistent is it? And are you prepared for emergencies? If there is some sort of medical emergency or housing emergency or something like that, where's that money coming from? How is one getting a hold of that money to cover that expense? So working on a budget and reviewing an estate plan, understand how those assets might pass to the next if something bad happens, or if something bad happens to both of you, that's important as well. So that summit is the crux of it all. And then from there, it's getting access. Make sure, just because one might be handling the vast majority of things, make sure the other has as an authorized user in case they need to take care of something. Make sure the other has durable power of attorney over financial affairs in case something bad happens once again, so that they can talk to representatives and they can make changes if needed. Now, if you are typically taking the back seat, now, for most of our listeners here, you're probably not. You're probably taking the front seat in your financial lives as a family, but maybe you're not. But it's always about taking some financial responsibility. One of the best ways to get the partner that is more riding the bus versus driving the bus to be more involved is put them in charge of something. It's like in a car, if you're going on a long road trip and the driver is just dealing with the map and watching where we're going and driving, well, the other one just sits there and does nothing. But maybe what if you give the other one the job of running the GPS and telling you where to turn? It gets them more involved, and in case something happens, they can take the wheel, and another set of eyes as well helps. So it provides an opportunity to work together and create a dialogue, share updates, responsibility. Just put them in charge of a couple of bills, the point person for certain relationships or something like that. That can help go a long way. Next, make sure you're at any meetings with a financial advisor to make sure everyone's in the loop, everyone knows what's going on, and you can have an additional touch point with that advisor so they know who the other spouse is in case something happens once again. But also, if there's needs to be a transition, you have some sort of relationship with them. And then understand how the assets might be transferred. This is really about having a trust and a will. Don't rely on people knowing how you want things to play out or hope things play out. It'll play out the way it is set up legally. And if you fail to spell that out in the proper documentation, then it can lead to a lot of family issues, family fractures, a lot of litigation, costly litigation, loss of tax savings, and sometimes completely unintentionally disinheriting somebody. And then lastly, this is pretty interesting, is previous relationships, especially if they have previous kids, previous marriages, understand how, say, a divorce decree should be factored into the estate plan. Does the previous spouse have some sort of right to certain assets, like a pension, for example, or Social Security? So maybe aspects of that settlement that you're not really accounting for. And then what about the other adult children? A lot of times you might get remarried, and you might tell the kids that you want to allow the new spouse to stay in that house until he or she passes away. And that might be communicated, but that's not in writing. And so you could pass and the kids decide, no, we want to sell the house. We want the money, and kick out somebody who might not be their parent, might be their step parent, right? There's no obligation for the child to respect those wishes unless it is in writing. So overall, just get involved, both of you. Communicate. And don't be complacent or take a back seat when it comes to your family's finances. Once again, whether you're driving the bus or just a passenger. Let's go talk to Carol in Alameda looking at WAT.
Yes. Hello. I opened my Schwab account today to be surprised to find a stock I'd never purchased. Its symbol is WAT. It's a spinoff from Becton and Dickinson, BD, and it got there by means of something I never heard of called a reverse Morris Trust. It just looks like a stock with shares. What do you think? Is it something I should get rid of, hold on to? Can you tell me anything about the reverse Morris Trust aspect?
Interesting. Looking at Waters, W-A-T is the symbol. And
yes.
This is, it's been a while since I've actually looked at a reverse Morse trust. And so I don't remember off the top of my head exactly what it means, but oftentimes there are spinoffs like this. And Becton Dickinson is a name that mainly develops medical supplies, devices, instrument systems, etc. And you're saying the symbol is WAT. Is that Waters Corp?
Yeah, like Muddy Waters, like
yeah,
Waters,
Muddy Waters
in a
okay.
river.
Yeah,
it's
so
like a $320 stock.
Yep, that's right. I would have to see exactly what this is. This is interesting because Waters has been around a while. I like Waters. It's a good company, and it is in the medical systems business. Let's see. Ah, that's what it is. Okay. So they acquired a piece of Becton Dickinson's business. And basically for that, instead of selling the whole business, they basically spun off that piece and sold it to Waters. And in order for Waters to acquire that, now I'm remembering what a reverse Morse trust is. So a lot of times what happens is Becton Dickinson would spin this off as a separate entity and then it publicly traded, but it spins it off and then sells it to Waters, and you're effectively, it's basically like Waters acquiring a small part of Becton Dickinson. Now it's not, so it's now you're owning whatever it spun off from Becton Dickinson along with the rest of Waters, basically. And
okay.
And so that's why you have it. Now I getting up to speed on this one. So
but
Waters,
so straightforward stock, not a
yep.
trust entity.
No.
That's going to be weird.
No, nothing like that. So Waters is a good company. Return equity is about 30%. I like that. Good balance sheet. And I would honestly, I'd hold it. I think it's good business.
Okay. Sounds good.
No problem.
Thank you
Thanks
very much.
For the call. That was interesting. Reverse Morse trust. I haven't heard about one of those in a long, long, long time. So it's not often that there isn't something I've heard of, at least recently. But yeah, this was my early days. I remember learning about that. Now, from time to time, we receive questions via web form from investtalk.com. Here's one that came in earlier. Hi, guys. Love the show. I'm looking at Netflix stock. I think this has fallen from its high and Liberation Day low. But given the circumstances of our Warner Brothers deal in their minds, is the stock price a buy? And where do you see a price moving over the next 6 to 12 months? So Netflix has been in a strong downtrend. I think a lot of this has to do with their inability to raise prices. I think they're done. You can't. They're getting to price levels where it's just like paying for cable. So what's the point of unplugging? And they've gone through the process of kicking people off, of sharing passwords and things like that. And they're trying to produce more great content. And, you know, they produce some good stuff, popular stuff. But, you know, they're trying to buy Time Warner, which owns HBO, which has a long history of producing great programming. And they're in a battle. I think it was Paramount, I believe. And so I believe they're going to take on debt. And there's just a lot of issues over the, you know, medium term with Netflix and its earnings trajectory. And it's in a clear downtrend. Its relative strength is 13. Let me give you a support level because it's lower than here. It's going to be down around $61. $61. Now we're trading at $79. So I think there's still some downside to go. You know, another decent down day today, down over 3% in a flat tape. So relative strength there is bad from day to day. Earnings expectations for this year and next year continue to come down to about $3.13 this year to $3.79 next year, but who knows where that will ultimately land. And it's still an $80 stock, so you're still trading at a high 20s market multiple. And that's an issue when they're likely adding debt to their balance sheets in order to do this deal. And, you know, they're paying a lot of money for Time Warner. Good for Time Warner shareholders, but not so much for Netflix or Paramount shareholders, depending on who actually eventually gets it. So we'll see that there. So I'm not a fan of this quite yet. What I would do, sell put options down at $60, $60, $65 in that range for Netflix going out maybe to March or April. That would be a good way to potentially enter the stock and gain exposure at those lower levels. Thanks for the call. Now let's pivot over to another voice mail question now.
Yes, I was wondering if you can give me your opinion on South Korea ETF FLKR. It's had a huge run over the last year. I'm wondering if it's a good time or if it's a safe long-term investment. Thanks. Bye.
Safe. I always hate that word in investing. Almost everything has risk. And to me, safe is safe. It's very liquid, very stable in price. I think of, when I think safe, I think CDs, I think treasury bonds, et cetera, short-term treasury bonds. That's safe. Now, it still has its own risks of inflation risk and things like that. But understand that safe is a complicated word, but I would not think of any equity investment as safe, any. Okay, I don't care if it's the bluest of blue chip names. But South Korea has moved dramatically, basically since Liberation Day lows. This ETF was down around $16. Today, it trades for $42. Quite the move, I would say. Now, the problem here is that it is, let's say the problem. What's driving this are memory costs. Memory costs are skyrocketing. And the capacity with SK Hynix and Samsung Electronics, that's 41, 42% of this ETF itself. So that's what's happening here. This is not just South Korea. This is really just a play on memory prices. So this is a great example of, like, know what you own. Are you gaining exposure to South Korea? Yes, but you're gaining massive exposure to memory businesses. Historically, memory businesses are very cyclical. You get overcapacity and undercapacity. Right now, there's undercapacity. They tend to build out more capacity. They're building more capacity. Eventually, they'll get there. The prices for memory will shift and roll over, and these stocks will go down dramatically. So I would not be buying it right now. You missed the boat. Keep an eye on it. Maybe when memory price is correct, but it's too high a risk right now. Now we're heading into a break, final break. So if you have a question, give me a call now at 888-99-CHART.
The calls are free. The unbiased answers are free. So what are you waiting for? Call InvestTalk, 888-99-CHART.
Let's answer a YouTube comment question. Remember, you can leave your question on our YouTube channel anytime. George says, this is a surprising development to me. I tried using Google Gemini a couple times, and its performance was abysmal compared to ChatGPT and Grok. It seems more reliable at producing incorrect answers than correct ones to the point of being functionally unusable. Maybe Google has improved it since, or maybe Gemini was deliberately underwhelming product means to lull competitors into complacency. I guess this is just more of a comment around Gemini versus some of the other platforms. So first off, with AI, you have to be using a paid model in order to really judge it. If you're using a free version of any of these platforms, you're using probably at least a year, maybe more dated model. And these models are advancing pretty fast. So you have to compare it to that. Also, you have to know which one you're using. And you know, there's Gemini, there's Pro, there's Thinking, there's Deep Research. And deep research is different as well between the models. ChatGPT has deep research. I'm not sure about Grok. I haven't used Grok too much. But what we've seen internally is that the Gemini's deep research is better than ChatGPT's deep research, at least for equity research and company research and market research. We find it to be more robust and more well thought out. And also the ecosystem around Gemini with Google and integrating with Google Google Drive with Notebook LM. A lot of the AI tools are right within the Google ecosystem as well, where ChatGPT doesn't really have that. So, you know, to each their own. Everybody has their own ones they like better. And really it comes down to, honestly, you know, these models are advancing pretty fast. So while one might be ahead of the other, a lot of people see Claude Opus 4.5, I believe, is the latest one, and that being the best. I definitely see Gemini Thinking Deep Research Mode as a leg up than the others. But once again, they're all pretty good. They just need a little oversight. Make sure you do that. Thanks for the comment. Let's talk about oil and the shale patch. And right now, American shale producers are starting to look abroad. Now, there's also been some consolidation, and this is mainly because these shale names are starting to, their growth is slowing here in the United States. That was clear in the back half of last year. And so it's like, okay, let's get together. Let's see how we can look at both of our inventory of wells and see how we can extract more from them using our proprietary technologies, et cetera. But beyond that, they have to look into foreign regions to really utilize their experience in shale and find shale regions in other countries, because the Permian is no longer the gusher that it used to be. And it was so prolific, but it's no longer. The Permian Basin wells were producing, let's see, in 2016, estimated to produce 65 barrels per lateral foot drilled. But last year, they produced only 46 barrels per lateral foot drilled, which means that same effort, a lot less return. So they're looking elsewhere. And especially those smaller producers, they only have about 2.5 years of high quality shale inventory left. The larger ones have about 7.5. So they have some runway there, but these smaller ones are trying to figure out what's next. And then you have demand. Demand was previously expected to top out in 2030. Now that's being pushed off further because of existing policies, demand for energy around AI infrastructure, especially natural gas. And so you're likely to not see an end to demand for fossil fuels anytime soon. So they need to find new capacity, new supply. And OPEC's spare capacity is shrinking as well. And then you have shale maturing. Now, where are they going? Argentina, Saudi Arabia. Those are kind of the first places they're going, but also UAE, Australia, Bahrain, Turkey, Libya, Algeria, as well as Mexico. These are all in the planning phases. But know that this is why oil prices are going up, is because that's marginal barrel of oil coming out of the Permian or just shale regions in the United States is no longer the base case. That has rolled over, and foreign investors, foreign oil companies, and companies with foreign exposure are doing better than domestic-focused ones. So keep an eye on that as well. Now, I'm Justin Klein, and let me remind you about KPP Financial's parallel investing. When we make a trade for our clients, I make the same trade for myself. Same day, same price, same percentage, no front running, no special treatment. We invest right alongside our clients. So we share the same risks and potential for returns and success. So learn more at investtalk.com. Please remember you can tell your friends and family about our free podcast downloads, which you can find anytime at iTunes or Spotify, or check out our content over on YouTube as well. Independent thinking, shared success. This is Invest Talk. Good night.
InvestTalk is a trademark of KPP Financial. Because of the nature of the interactive dialogue inherent in the format of this program, it's important for the listener to understand that not all comments made will apply to them. Specifically, nothing said shall be taken to be investment advice, or shall statements on this program be considered an offer to buy or sell security. Because such advice is rendered solely on an individual basis and at times will require that the investor review a prospectus before investing. InvestTalk is a copyrighted program of Klein, Pavlis, and Peasley Financial, a registered investment advisor firm which retains all rights. For more information regarding KPP's investment advisors, call 1-800-557-5461. Thank you for listening. and your comments and questions are welcome on our 24-hour listener line at 888-99-CHART.